This episode is brought to you by Tending to You. Tending to You provides mobile bartenders and waitstaff for private events in Louisiana and the greater Houston area. Learn more at tendingtoyou.com. That's tending, the number two, and the letter U.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we continue our trade series with a piquant look at the many faces of the spice trade. From the high price tag of saffron to the ubiquity of chilies and the potential ripple effect that farmer protests in India may have on the global spice market.
You know, farmers are protesting because they feel like their lives and livelihoods are on the line.
You find it in a lot of cured foods like cured meat and Parmesan cheese. You also find it in ripening foods, like ripe tomatoes are very high in MSG. So there's sources of it all over the natural world.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
There has perhaps never been a more important time than now to be involved in your community. The place you live, the people you work with, the guests that patronize your business. Community can be a catalyst for your business. It can also be a lifeline. The restaurant community has grown immensely over the past 20 years. I have vivid memories as a young cook of competitive atmospheres both within restaurants and with other restaurants, both in New Orleans and here in New York City. For the better, those mindsets are mostly outdated, part of an era that launched today's positive change in hospitality. In its place now exists, for the lack of another term, the buzzy but apt collaboration. No, we don't just mean quirky food combos, rather legitimate teamwork within and amongst the greater hospitality community. In the case of today's guest, he may not be here if it weren't for such openness, sharing, and the partner approach to cooking that exists today.
Our guest today is Eric C. He's a Brooklyn-based pastry chef and the founder of the short-lived but very well-received The Awkward Scone Cafe in Bushwick. C opened Ursula, a New Mexican-inspired cafe and bakery, and an homage to his grandmother and New Mexican upbringing in Crown Heights in September 2020. Diners quickly began lining up to get their hands on a chili-laced breakfast burrito. Alex and I and our two young daughters were actually included in that line. And it didn't take long for the press to take notice either. Eric was named a rising star by Star Chefs and received glowing write-ups by both Eater and Grub Street. We're so happy to have you here, Eric.
Hi, Jenny. Hi, Alex. I'm happy to be here.
Welcome.
Welcome, welcome. So tell us a little bit, you know, when I was like looking at your bio and doing like a little due diligence before this episode, what struck me is that you closed The Awkward Scone in June and then opened Ursula in September. So that's just 3 months, which is very fast. Can you talk to us a little bit about the journey?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if we have enough time for the whole journey.
Cliff Notes version. But,
yeah. Well, so I had to close The Awkward Scone in June, as you stated. And I have been in the kitchen in New York for the last 10 years. So I have no savings, no backup. So I work in a kitchen to support myself. And so I lost my lifeline by losing the cafe. And it kind of brought a lot of stuff to the forefront. Do I want to keep hustling in New York? Do I want to keep working this hard? Or do I go back to New Mexico and take it easy for a little bit? So I was considering a lot of that stuff. And in the middle of a pandemic, I got to see that we weren't alone in New York dealing with all of this. And we had it, we kind of had it the hardest when we first started here in New York with all the restrictions. And I was talking to people outside of the New York City bubble, and people were having a hard time believing that the severity of the pandemic was real because they weren't taking the restrictions as seriously elsewhere. They were in New Mexico, though. I took a little road trip with my dog very safely, staying in national campgrounds in a tent all the way through, kind of staying away from the cities to go see my family. And even in New Mexico, they were not doing indoor dining. There were no jobs available. All my friends were unemployed. And so it was like, oh, damn, well, I can't escape unemployment. It's going to be everywhere. So when I got back to Brooklyn, they had just really kicked off the outdoor street dining. The like the big parts of the BLM protest had kind of started to wind down, but there was still a lot of energy in New York City and in Brooklyn especially. And that was really buoying to come back from driving across the country and everything just being kind of sleepy. And to come back and after all that we had been through here in New York, like people were still trying to live their lives as safely and as joyously as possible. So I was like, all right, I think I can stick it out in Brooklyn for a little bit longer. I also had just gotten a really incredible apartment on the back of somebody else's trauma. My friend Holly had to close her catering company here in Brooklyn or put it on pause while she moved upstate and had to give up her apartment. And it has a backyard and a washer and dryer. And I've never had an apartment this big in Brooklyn. So I was like, I owe it to myself to live here for at least a year.
So it was the apartment that kept you here, not the...
It was a lot of things, but that was part of it. I remember when I was like 22 or 23, I was working at a hotel and I quit and the general manager didn't want me to quit. And he was like, well, what if we give you like this department head position to run the gift shop? And I was like, that sounds terrible. He was like, well, it'll be a pay raise. You'll be a department head and just try it out for a year. And I was like, all right, I'll give you a year. So I feel like that's my boundary is a year. So I took the lease for this apartment and I was like, let's see what we can do.
So then tell us a little bit about the space that you got that is currently housing Ursula and how that all came to be.
Yeah. So while I was on my road trip, I was also in the midst of like negotiating a new space to house the reincarnation of the Awkward Scone kind of as it was. But I didn't have enough, what's the word I'm looking for? I didn't believe that I was going to be able to weather the storm, by investing a bunch of money into this space. And I was looking at a place in Clinton Hill and it was about $5,000 or $6,000 a month, just as the base rent. And I was going to have to dump about $50,000 in between the deposit and equipment needs to get it ready. And the landlord was like 80 years old and didn't use email and everything was taking forever. And I feel like there was something in the stars that were preventing me from signing that lease. I didn't feel confident about it. I didn't feel good about it, but I didn't feel like I had any other options. And when I got back to Brooklyn, I had done a couple pop-ups at Hunky Dory to kind of test the waters with this concept of more strictly New Mexican food. Because I had only done breakfast burritos at the Awkward Scone. It wasn't really a New Mexican-inspired space. But Claire had this space that she was not using because she wanted to use it for a wine bar, and then COVID happened. And we talked about me using it for the next year to test out Ursula. And it was just like all the pieces just fell together. And the pandemic unemployment insurance was about to run out and I was going to be without any kind of financial security. So I was like, well, I'm going to open this. And we took 6 weeks to turn it around. And within the moment of me and Claire deciding that I was going to open up Ursula there and September 30th, it was 6 weeks of just nonstop work and conceiving a menu, rehiring most of my staff from the Awkward Scone, finding a couple new folks. And then we were just up and running.
So basically Claire was like, I have this space, and you signed like a sublease agreement sort of with her for 1 year.
Yeah. It's her space. I can't get into like too many of the technicalities of it, yeah. But yes, me and Claire are working together on this space as I operate Ursula.
Perfect. And then, and what did you have to do to the space? Like you mentioned the investment and the other space wasn't really financially feasible. So tell us a little bit about the conditions. Cause I know the space wasn't actually currently in operation.
No, it had been a pretzel shop like 6 years prior and nothing had been in there for 6 years. So the basement was in disarray. Like the ceiling was falling out. But the big thing about this space was that it was already vented. It had a hood system and it had a six burner range. And that was that's, as most people know in restaurants, that's one of the major kitchen investments, is that hood system. And aside from that, I just kind of had to populate it with tables. And I had a bunch of equipment from the Awkward Scone. I had a mixer, I had a bunch of tables. And aside from that, it was just kind of building this faux wall. Oh, it already had a walk-in too. So I brought in some of the smaller equipment and brought in a contractor to build a wall to build out the counter. And aside from just like cleaning out the basement to make it a workable space and decorating it, it was pretty minimal. I mean, and there's a lot of Band-Aids on there. Yeah. I definitely need to go back. I'm learning a lot about where I should have spent a little more time.
Tell us a little bit about those Band-Aids. I mean, because I think those are the things, right? It's like, you know, you sort of put stuff together and you go with it. But then you're like, oh, shit. You know, or have there been any Band-Aids where you're like, oh, my God, it would have saved us money if we would have done this in the first place? Or you're just sort of like figuring it out day by day?
A little of everything. And there's some of it that's like aesthetics. I didn't redo the floor in there, and it's this really old tile. And every day that I walk in, it's grating to me. It's slippery. It's ugly. It'll go. If things are working out, I'm going to close for a little while and try and fix that. But there's a lot of patchwork that was done. This building is super old, and like the floor in the basement, the concrete is just so old and brittle. And I put a really thin layer of epoxy down there. And I really should have just redone the floor entirely because the epoxy broke off and there's pieces of the floor that are crumbling. The perimeter around the building has not properly been sealed. So every single time that it rains hard or snows, it leaks into the basement. I have to go put out a tarp over the hatch and in front of the cafe every single time to prepare for the snow.
Those are things that the landlord's not going to, wouldn't help with?
It's a matter of getting the landlord to actually do it.
Right.
And yeah, some of this stuff is building maintenance that falls under their responsibility, but that's also convincing the landlord of that. And then there was just other stuff that we didn't look deep enough into in terms of the way the building was set up. There was the steam pipe for the boiler for the residential above us goes through the basement and through the kitchen. And there was a leak in one of the pipes. And what we had like painted and covered up in the basement, one day when it was cold and the boiler was up, it burst out the wall and it was just steaming from the pipe all night. So I walked up and opened the hatch and it was like a sauna had just been opened up and the ceiling was covered with water and condensation. It was like way too hot to work down there. And we had to have that fixed up. There was a clog in the basement drain for the whole building, not just Ursula, but Ursula felt the effects of it because it flooded the basement for about 10 hours. And I was just shot vacuuming water for 10 hours.
Oh my God. I mean, this is like the unsexy stuff that is like real deal, true entrepreneurship things that happen to all of us where you're like,
have you rethought that choice about diving back into the hustle very many times?
Yeah. I actually, right before this, my baker is there right now and she just texted me that the mixer, the 20 quart Hobart isn't working.
Oh my God.
I just want to like curl up.
I know. It's like some days you just want to curl up and cry. And then you see a line of people waiting to eat your delicious burritos and you're like, it's okay. It's worth it.
Oh my God. If they knew what was going on behind the scenes all the time. There was one day too, because I have to, there's some other investments I need to make. I need to upgrade the electrical there. I thought it was enough, but the moment we turn on the heater, it just blows the whole circuit for the whole place. And one day we did that, the electricity went out, and it was raining really hard. So it was leaking into the basement. I was trying to deal with the leak. This was the first time the electricity went out and I didn't know where our main breaker was. And I was panicked. Somebody came up to the door and I was like, I'm sorry, ma'am, we're going to be closed for a little while. The electricity's out and I've got a leak. And she's like, oh, well, how long is it going to be?
It's like, oh my god.
I need a burrito now.
Well,
you know your way around a circuit breaker? Come here and give me a hand.
I was like, I'm still trying to figure it out myself, so I can't be certain how long it's going to be. And she was like, of course, the one time I actually get out here to get a burrito and I can't even get one.
Sorry to disappoint you. I am sorry to disappoint you.
But the gas was still running. So I was like, just you guys, will you make her burrito? We can still run her card because the iPad's charged. So we did. And then she was like, well, actually, I want two.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I hope she left you a 5-star review on Yelp.
Yeah.
I don't think so, but
I mean, so it's with all of these things that are happening now you guys are busy. Are you kicking off enough cash to go back and do some of these reinvestments?
Yes. Yes. And no. So there's so many things that you have to invest in right now. I would love to cover some of the seating outside, or upgrade the electric so that I can put electric heaters outside. But then that takes away from the cash flow, cash stash that could then go to the staff or other improvements or expansion. So I'm trying to figure out like where to reinvest that money into the business. I mean, it's constantly going back into the business with new piece of equipment, new tools, whatever. With this outdoor heating situation and dining, we're using propane right now and I only have 2 heaters, but that's $100 a day for me to use these 2 heaters. And if I had them near all the tables, I'd be spending $300 a day.
Yeah, which is not nothing, obviously.
And my whole goal of trying this concept out that was more casual and takeout and delivery friendly was to kind of minimize some of the labor needs so that I could invest more of the money into my actual staff.
Right.
And pay higher wages. So every time that I take away money from that opportunity, I have to reconsider that.
So tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean? Like how are you doing things differently with your team here?
Well, we've got a really small, tight-knit crew. I'm still working in every position. Sometimes I'm the barista. I wash dishes every day. Sometimes I'm on the line. But in order to make sure that everyone can get the hours that they need, we keep it tight. I started everybody in the kitchen at a few dollars higher than the minimum wage. The baristas as well were higher than the tipped minimum wage here in New York because I wanted them all to have a base starting wage that was respectful for one, and made them feel comfortable and respected at the space. It's still... We're never going to be able to pay people what they're worth in New York if we're having to pay all the money back to our landlords and utilities. But I feel like this is a good start, or the best that I can do for them. And then I gave them a bonus at Christmas when I saw that we had made enough money that I could redistribute some of that to the staff. So I'm trying to pay them as much as I can to also save those opportunities to redistribute later when I know that we've made enough money to do that.
Eric, that was born, you know, that idea was born out of your years in kitchens, whatnot, right? Of seeing inequity in pay.
Yeah, it absolutely has been. I have been in kitchens since I was like 11 years old. So I've seen all the inequities. And here in New York, and I start to understand a lot of it now that I'm on the other side, but I remember working for a couple business owners where I was just like constantly flabbergasted at their decision-making process and their just like complete lack of regard for their staff. Anytime they were trying to keep money from them, not pay them for things, even the whole idea of like trails, unpaid trails in New York, I think is a really weird and antiquated system. But I worked for some people that just like, they weren't paying their employees enough. They weren't paying them on time. They were trying to short them on like sick days. And I was always, even as like the manager of the kitchen or even just a coworker, I was always standing up for like workers' rights and telling the owners like, no, you have to pay them for this. That's illegal. You can't do this. And so I set out on my own to start my own business, hopefully to be able to change the narrative on that. And once I started, I got to see how very quickly why some of those decisions are made and like why they're so flippant, because it, just the amount of bills and utilities on the other side of just rent and labor are insane. So I was like, okay, I understand why it doesn't make it right, but I saw like what the decision-making process for the employers were for this.
Right.
But I also, I'm not interested in that kind of model where I have to circumvent the employee's wellness. You can't do it without your staff.
That is definitely true.
This episode is brought to you by Tending to You. Tending to You provides mobile bartenders and waitstaff for private events in Louisiana and the greater Houston area. Their dedicated and capable team specializes in traditional sit-down dinner gatherings, past appetizer service, buffet-style meals, and bartending refreshing customized cocktails and beverages. They provide all their own tools needed for a pop-up bar, including drinkware, garnishes, napkins, and more to be set up for success. They also come equipped with trays, gloves, and cleaning products, which allows Tending to You to provide a superior level of service. Learn more at tendingtoyou.com. That's tending, the number two, and the letter u.com.
Eric, and part of our chat today is about collaboration. I don't think we've got into yet your work with Lonnie and her business and how you guys are sort of intertwined in the beginning. And I know obviously you still retail her goods, but can you tell us a little bit about how you guys met and how that sort of, you know, worked out well for both of you in the very beginning?
Yeah, me and Lonnie met at a culinary incubator, the now defunct Pilot Works, Brooklyn Food Works. And she verbally attacked me and accosted me is how I remember it.
Just knowing Lonnie, I love that.
I love this.
Yeah, I was minding my own business in the kitchen. She was new in the kitchen, but I was always there. And she knew that I knew my way around, but she came up and accosted me thinking that my stuff was in front of her stuff and she needed me to move it. She knew it wasn't mine. I think she just wanted to talk to me. But after that, I was like, okay, I clocked her. And then she was sitting out in the little waiting room or like the little like lobby for the space. And I went and sat down on the couch next to her and said something sassy to her. And then I ended up sitting there for like 2 hours just talking to her. And we were just like having a very intimate conversation about our past and things that you would never tell somebody you just met. But we've become kind of inseparable since then. Along with our friend Woldy, who runs Woldy Cucina, the three of us have always been in cahoots together. And at the Awkward Scone, I had a bigger kitchen. And so Lonnie was working out of that space after Pilot Works shut down. And that should be its own episode, that whole mess. But Woldy didn't have any place to work and he came to work out of my kitchen as well. So the three of us were always together. We did a pop-up last summer at Dame. I'm selling Lonnie's stuff there. She started out by producing at Ursula when we first opened, but it was really tight and she wanted a completely gluten-free space as her goal. So it was inevitable that she was going to leave me and get her own space, but we still sell her stuff there. And Woldy's actually doing a pop-up with us on Monday.
I saw that. I'm starting as a series of pop-ups, right?
Yep. I'm doing a queer community takeout pop-up series. And right now I think we have 6 different chefs lined up over the next 2 months to come take over my space and sell their food.
That's amazing. Tell us a little bit about how that benefits everybody, and you know, aside from giving someone else a platform, do you feel like it brings in new customers to Ursula? Is it good for revenue? Tell us how some of the concrete financial dynamics of doing these collabs.
Well, I'm not going to lie. It really only benefits me because then I don't have to leave my kitchen to eat. All of these chefs that I have lined up right now, I've either had their food or I've been wanting to have their food for a long time. And I'm always at work. So it's really about just bringing the food to me.
Was that always part of like the business plan? And how has it helped like spread the word? You know, is it for fun? Is this like also there's like a good marketing and cross sell? Tell us a little bit about how that all works.
I mean, the marketing part of it is definitely like a positive byproduct of it. But no, this is the idea of community and working with and for your community has always, always been a pillar of my business plan. At the Awkward Scone, I used to use the walls to showcase art from local artists in the neighborhood. And we would have an art opening for those artists because my brother was an artist. And I saw how hard it was for him to get the attention of gallerists or curators or any of this. If you're not in the elite, they don't want to pay attention to you. And there are incredible artists out there that don't have the means or the network to showcase their art. And so this was that's what I had to offer there was a lot of wall space. And I gave them the chance to like have their little opening, have their friends. We would provide the food. It was no cost to them. And in turn, I got to have the walls beautifully decorated and we would rotate it. And we would have meetings for like Queer Soup Night and Jari and other queer organizations there. I've made it a pillar to always give back financially, either through contributions or food or even just my labor and time to queer organizations. So this is really just a continuation of that. And also returning the favor. The pop-ups that I did at Hunky were what kept me alive. They're what started the fire for Ursula. And I wouldn't be here without those opportunities myself. And all of these people that are lined up right now have either lost their business or had to reconfigure or restructure what they're doing with their lives and their business. And for me, community, again, like I said, I have the space at Ursula because of somebody else helping me out. And it's important for us to continue that kind of sharing of resources. And if I have the kitchen space, if I have the resources, and right now people are paying attention to Ursula, and I'm very fortunate that there's a lot of eyes on us. So rather than like hoarding all of that attention for myself, this is an opportunity for me to give space and to these other voices who may not get the attention of all the different food media press. And so it's like, hey, well, if you're watching me, then watch this. So I care about these people. I care about my community and seeing it through all of this. We lost a ton of queer restaurants and bars and spaces, and I want to make sure to save space for us. They've supported me, and I want to continue supporting them.
That makes sense. And I mean, I think that is exactly what the definition of community is all about. So you're up and running, and obviously the reception's been good. So any plans to scale?
I have been thinking about that, and I take every day individually, because every time that I start thinking about the next day, then I just get slapped in the face with a flooded basement.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I haven't had enough time to like give it enough thought. And on September 30th last year, I was hoping for the best and I was hoping that we were going to be busy, but I also was kind of planning for a slow and organic build. But it was just busy right out the gate and it's been busy. And I'm very, very thankful for that. But I haven't had enough headspace to consider the next stage. But I do think that if it's not a bigger Ursula or a spinoff just doing burritos, because people really are hankering for those. Our lunch business and our like Sopaipilla business, I've been selling so many fried chicken sandwiches lately, but that's starting to take off, which makes me happy that I'm not just forever going to be known as the burrito guy.
The burrito guy. And was the burrito thing, was that expected or was that just like totally out of like left field? You're like, oh my God, people are bananas for my burritos.
I mean, I'm bananas for New Mexican style breakfast burritos. I've been here for 10 years, and when I got here, I think I had one burrito somewhere and I never had one again. And to me, that's a testament of like the lack of great burritos here now. I think that within the last couple of years, there's been more people doing good burrito making. Oxalis had a really amazing breakfast burrito. I know Nico was on here recently too.
He was, yeah.
His breakfast burrito was the only other one that I would eat. But no, I've been, it was wild to me. I've been a pastry chef in New York for 10 years and I've worked all over the country, all over the world doing that. I've worked with some amazing chefs and it took me rolling a tortilla around hash browns to like get some attention.
I love it. Yeah.
No, I didn't expect it to hit it off, but I guess that just, like I said, it speaks to where the voids are in our food here.
I think,
and also I think sometimes it speaks to you know, doing what you truly know and love really well. You know, I think having that, you know, personal passion for what you're making, you know, I think makes a big difference in how you do it too. But
I agree, and it's easier for people to like have a story to associate with you, or say to even put you in a box.
Right.
The Awkward Scone didn't have like a really cohesive narrative. That was an evolution of over like 6 years, but it also, I brought a business partner into the fold shortly before opening, and that kind of diluted what I had like dreamt of for that space. And so then it was a great space. It was great food. There was a great community and energy there, but it wasn't like anything that you could like put your finger on, and people like to be able to do that here. And so the moment that I like packaged up Ursula, and even the moment I got the logo, I was like, oh, this is it. The logo was made for me by one of the artists. Her name's Simi. And she used to have her artwork in the Awkward Scone. And when I said that I was going to open up Ursula, she wanted to do the logo, and she just like knocked it out of the park on the first round.
Like seriously knocked it out of the park though. Cause you like, you walk up to the cafe and that's like basically, I mean, you like walk up to your cafe and like, you just automatically, you look at the logo and you have New Mexico vibes, you know, I think it's, it is a great logo.
Props to her on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone's looking for logo design, brand design, or she does some really incredible like mixed medium paper mache art. Her name's Simi Matani. She's amazing.
She have a business name?
Well, her Instagram is Simi, S-I-M-I, Automatic.
Simi Automatic. All right.
Cool. I will be giving her a follow momentarily.
We're going to go on to a lightning round, Eric, of hopefully quick answer questions.
Are you telling me to keep it concise?
No, they're just meant to be like one word. We like to.
Most of them are meant to be that way. Some of them, obviously, you cannot hit with one word.
So. Yeah. So, all right. You know,
Jenny, you want to start?
Sure. All right. So this, we have a good friend from New Mexico, and he always yells at us. So I think I know the answer. But chili with an I or chili with an E?
With an E. This is. It's like, it's funny, but it's also. Can I elaborate on this for a second?
Yes,
no, it's
go not ahead. Concise. Tell us.
There's actually like a congressional writing where they changed the spelling of chili in New Mexico to include an E and not an I. Chili with an I is usually associated with like Tex-Mex chili and more of a prepared thing.
Super Bowl chili, right.
And it's not even like chilies, it's chili. Like it's already pluralized. But it's New Mexicans get real upset about this. And
they
anytime
get
I,
real upset about it. Yeah, for sure. So
anytime I have an article come out and they do that, I get so many DMs about it. And I'm like, listen, I know.
The New Mexicans are up in arms. They are like, get it right.
Did you tell them all right. With an E? Okay, green or red?
Green or red chilies with an E.
It was actually one of the articles that came out. I was a little disappointed in actually because the writer, I spoke to them about this and they called the fact check with me. And I said, just make sure you spell it with an E. It's a cultural thing. And that's the way that we do it here. And people are going to be really upset. And they didn't listen to me. I guess the people above the writer wanted to use their style and whatever they do grammatically. And they got a bunch of emails about it. And I was like, well, listen, I told you about it, but this is like a form of cultural erasure by you saying, well, this is how we do it here. I don't care what you do out there. And I was like, no, that's saying that our culture is not important enough to regard or respect. But yeah, it's chili with an E.
Chili with an E. Eric, is it green or red for preference?
It depends on what I'm eating. Usually a green.
Does one lean toward seafood more, or how does it work? What do you mean when versus what you're eating? Is one more acidic? Is it one more spice to it?
Red. Well, it also depends on where you're getting it from. Green has a much fresher flavor. Red is a little richer and sweeter. If I'm eating enchiladas, then it has to be with red. If I'm eating a burrito, I like it with green. If that helps differentiate.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our next one, which is your most ordered burrito on the menu.
The chorizo burrito.
The chorizo.
Pork and red chili.
And then what about your favorite burrito on the menu?
I just told you that I eat green when I eat burritos, but that one's actually my favorite. No, actually what I would do is a bean and cheese burrito with green chili. That's what I would want to eat.
Is that on the menu?
If you want it to be, like, you can order it that way.
No,
you can add cheese to whatever you want. So you just get the bean burrito and add cheese.
Got it. Now I know the order next time we're there. Biggest hurdle to starting Ursula?
To be honest, I feel like it would just be confidence for me. My confidence in starting a new business in the middle of a pandemic. I was lucky enough to have a lot of support from my family, physically and my community to get it off the ground. Like, see me doing the logo. No Effects did my first round of photography, for free. Lonnie was helping me there all the time, and my brother and sister and nephew. So what was keeping me back or holding me back the most was just the confidence.
I mean, I think that's the amazing thing about having community is they also can boost confidence with that vote of support.
Absolutely.
Tell us what was the best part of starting Ursula?
The excitement. I think a few things. One, I was able, a lot of my staff was like, they were looking for jobs. They really needed jobs. And to be able to open up an opportunity for 9 people to be employed in the middle of a pandemic felt really good.
Yeah, for sure.
Just seeing a line out there. It's stressful in the moment, but it's exciting to see people get this excited about New Mexican food. If you had asked me at any point in my life what I would be doing right now, I never would have imagined that I'd be serving New Mexican food in Brooklyn.
Well, congrats. It's working. Give us the best piece of business advice for other prospective owners looking to start their restaurant.
Take care of your staff. I think that that's a big one. Never neglect your staff. And be one with your community. Don't shun your community. I think, especially since that was the premise of this podcast, like, they're what helped Ursula come to fruition. And I would never be able to do it without my community again.
Perfect. We like to shout out any openings or reopenings. We call it our opening soon announcements. Do you have anybody you want to?
Oh, I should have thought about this. I do want to shout out the Sunday pant from Tillet because that front pocket, I forget this until I put them on every single time I wear them.
That was a restaurant at first.
I know. No.
I like the name.
Every time I put them on and I remember that front pocket is there, I'm just so overjoyed by it. I hate having things in my side pockets, and I commend you on that style design.
Well played.
I'm not keen on too many other openings right now, but I think that there's some recent openings that are really exciting for me, for All Things Good in Brooklyn. They're doing really amazing food. The chefs that are coming to the queer pop-up series, Jessica and Trina Twin from Dacha, they're doing really amazing modern Eastern European cuisine. Woldy Cucina. We have Tony Ortiz, Chile con Miel on Instagram. He's going to be doing some traditional Mexican cooking. Zacharias Gonzalez is going to be more pastry focused with some Cuban and Latin inspiration. He does this amazing carrot flan that's sweetened with the carrot juice. I had it a month ago or so, and I've been dying to have it again. I think Kia Damon and Tiff Bryant, one of my staff members, are going to be in the lineup. And then one of my cooks, Hender Gonzalez, is going to be doing Peruvian food too. So I'm gonna one up opening soon the queer pop-up series.
I love it. Yep. Yes. Where can people follow along to see the queer pop-ups, like get all the information on the queer pop-up series?
At each of those individual chefs' pages, but also at Ursula_Brooklyn, there'll be updates for every piece of the series coming along.
Amazing.
And then I'm at Eric the Awkward Scone.
Perfect. Well, you just wrapped it up for us. Usually we do like a little spiel and say, where can people find you? But now people know.
Listen, I've listened to your podcast before.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm thrown off. I normally do the wrap up. If you want to find us, we know where to find Eric, and we're very excited to find all these other food people that will be doing pop ups at your queer pop up series. And you can find us at We Are Opening Soon and at Till NYC. Catch you next time. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.